Please come to order, let the record show. Vice Chairman Sturzluski, Senator DeBreeze, myself present. First bill before us today is House Bill 418. The sponsor's here, Representative Malouf.
Madam Chairman, my name is Andre Maru. I'm a member of the Alaska House of Representatives. You have before you House Bill 418, which would extend the Good Samaritan law to protect emergency medical technicians and paramedics. That's it in a nutshell. The Good Samaritan bill, or the Good Samaritan law, currently does not do that. It does protect people who do not have a duty to respond, such as physicians, dentists, or for that matter, the common person. But people who do have a duty to respond, such as EMTs and paramedics, are not protected. This would protect them. This bill is supported by the Health Association of Alaska, formerly the Alaska State Hospital Association, supported by the Alaska State Firefighters Association. In fact, the president of that group was the person who requested me to introduce the bill. It is supported by the Southern Region EMS Council. It's supported by various volunteer fire departments around the state and various emergency medical service groups around the state. In fact, I don't know really of anybody who does oppose it.
Are there questions from members of the committee of Representative Root?
Been a loophole or stakehold there because all of us, and I think in all of our districts, have EMS and how much we really depend upon them. Almost all of them are volunteers with very minimal amount of remuneration, and so I think it's time that we get some thanks.
Are there further questions? Thank you very much. Is Mark Johnson here? I'm not waiting for him. Is anybody else who wishes to speak to this legislation? Then the public section is closed. What is your pleasure concerning HB 418, Chair?
Chair, I would move House Bill 418 with the individual recommendations as unanimous consent.
Is there objection? So be it. House Bill, thank you very much. House Bill 497, that's the custody, support, visitation, birth certificates of children. Kathy Marshall.
My name is Kathy Marshall. I'm the director of the Alaska Women's Commission, and the Women's Commission requested the governor introduce this piece of legislation primarily because we were concerned about the number of children that are facing divorce during their lifetime. The U.S. Census Bureau estimates two-thirds of all children by the time they are 17 are going to go through a divorce, those born in 1980, and we find that just a horrifying kind of statistic. So our major concern is that the courts take a look at custody arrangements and make sure that they are in the best interests of the children. This bill would require the court to examine those agreements in a little more depth. If they suspect that any coercion or any kind of problem exists, that people have made these agreements not really with their children's best interest in mind, then the court system will treat them as a disputed custody, and then they'll go into all the factors that they would normally use. So the bill is really, although it doesn't do a tremendous amount, it does state a policy that the court will look at more depth in these custody arrangements.
Are there questions?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Senator Joseph.
Marshall, I'm looking at the staff's sectional analysis, and my understanding as I read this is different from what I thought when the bill passed the House. To say it as a statement that I like the idea of having the child custody agreements examined because my own experience as an attorney has been that women will often assume that the husband's recitation of what the law is or what her rights would be if she contests an action are correct. It's a cultural thing, and some women are unable to understand that the husband may be speaking from self-interest. They're used to hearing him describe that, you know, if your name isn't on the title of the home, the court won't give you anything, so they sign off. And I think that kind of control is helpful. But the notes here say that the bill would require the court to list the reasons why shared custody has been awarded or denied, rather than only when denied as under your current statute. And I'm concerned with that because shared custody seems to me to be a useful way to maintain a relationship between the child and both parents. Connote some level of cooperation, wouldn't it be sound policy to to favor that as a presumptive way for adults to deal with the issue of custody rather than go backwards and adopt the language that's proposed to you?
Thank you. What we found is that there's been a lot of research that indicates that joint custody is indeed the custody of choice if there is no hostility. If indeed the custody arrangement has been made in a non-coercive way, because what joint custody usually means is that the mother ends up with the physical custody of the child. And what research has indicated is that if there's any hostility, it's particularly detrimental to the children, and that there is a tremendous amount of relitigation and a lot of court problems with joint custody. So all we're saying is that we would like the court to list their reasons when they either deny it or when they award it, just to indicate that they have looked at it in more depth.
Now, if I might, in the House debate, I think Representative Taylor argued that the court was not equipped, especially at the level of masters, to deal with this issue, just in terms of time. She's probably the special manpower. I suppose we'll hear from the court system on that, but is that issue addressed here?
I don't believe that the intent of this bill is to increase a tremendous amount of time on the part of the court system. The way we are anticipating this is that, you know, the majority of areas in this state do not have custody investigators, and how they are currently being dealt with is how we anticipate they will be dealt with under this legislation. And we're just anticipating that a few more questions will be asked, and for those cases that are no problem, that they will just move right on along. But I'm sure that Carla Forsyth from the court system can more adequately address that.
Thank you.
Are there further questions? Any member of the committee?
I'd like to hear more about this matter of the shared custody, because what bothers me is that there could be a signal here that that the court is on the defensive if it awards or encourages shared custody, and I don't want to say
that. Senator Josephson, at the prerogative of the chair, I'd ask you if you take a good look at that issue and report to us on your recommendations.
Yes,
the problems,
yes.
We will meet. Thank you, Bill. Jerry Gall?
Yes,
Women's Lobby?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Jerry Gall with the Women's Lobby, and we do support this legislation because we feel that it really focuses the needed emphasis on the best interests of the child in custody decisions. There is only one part of the bill as it comes before you that concerns us, and that is on page 2. It was a floor amendment added in the House. And it's on beginning on line 7. After saying that in awarding custody, the court shall consider only those factors which directly affect the well-being of the child, which was something that was the intent of the legislation. They have added, this subsection does not prohibit the court from considering the impact of a custody award on either parent to the extent such impact may affect the best interests of the child. And it's my concern that this does sort of erode the best interests of the child, which I think was the original focus of the bill, to then take the focus away from the child to see what the sponsor of the amendment said was that he felt that taking the children away from the female parent sometimes will be so disturbing to the female parent that will then impact the relationship with the child. But I think that is not something that we are that concerned about, because in 90% of the cases, there isn't, the female parent is awarded custody of the child, and only about 7% of the cases is that contested, even that the father will ask for custody. And so our concern is just that the best interests of the child be the main focus of the
measure.
Just reading this, that is there something hidden behind the court shall consider only those factors that directly affect the well-being of the child? Well, that seems to me that could be interpreted to be all kinds of things, including maybe the next sentence. I think you would.
Well, I think
directly affect
the
well-being of the child.
Intent of directly affect the well-being of the child was that they didn't want brought into the custody case extraneous lifestyle, you know,
well,
judgments. on a parent that wouldn't necessarily affect the well-being of the child.
Madam Chair, what you're referring to is theoretically, I've seen this kind of situation, where a parent is promiscuous but discreet, and the promiscuity occurs outside the presence of the child. The first sentence says that isn't going to be taken into consideration.
Right.
And the second sentence says that if a parent will suffer, let's say, a nervous breakdown from being separated from his or her child, that's not an issue. That is an issue which can be considered under the House Amendment. On the theory that the father or mother's emotional well-being would be important to the child. And you're saying that shouldn't be considered because its effect on the child is indirect. Is that something? What do you think about that?
Well, I think that the court should, in weighing these decisions, just keep the best interests of the child foremost. I just didn't see that there were going to be many cases of that occurring where a parent was.
Of course, that's true. But suppose that there's a psychologist who testifies that the mother or father derives a tremendous part of that parent's self-image by the nurturing of the child, and that the deprivation of custody would operate as a trauma for the parent. I'm not asking this because I have an answer. I just want to know what you think. Should that kind of testimony be admissible, and should it be given any weight?
It's a hard question, but I think that the parent that is most fit to have the child, regardless of the emotional impact on that parent, should be given custody of the child.
What if the child wanted to go with the other parent?
I think that's something that the court would then have to consider as what the best interests of the emotional state of the child, depending on where the custody was going to be.
Are there further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Carla, did you wish to testify?
Madam Chair, my name is Carla Forsyth, General Counsel of the Alaska Court System. Madam Chair, this bill originally started out requiring the court to actively solicit information about custody, the custody factors that are enumerated in the statute, religious preference, social conditions, all sorts of things, in each and every custody case. The way that the courts do that now is through using custody investigators or guardians ad litem, and that's generally only done in contested cases. Since the bill originally would have required that in all cases, the court system did submit a fiscal note which would have basically provided for custody investigations in all cases. With this particular amendment, that language is deleted. So the court's position that this legislation really is not that different from what the court system does right now. The language that appears in Section 1 basically is going to come up in the context of settlement agreements that parties enter into. The judges do look at these now. Certainly it won't hurt to have this language in the statute, but it really is not that different from what the court is doing at the present time. The main impact on the court right now will come from Section 3, as Senator Josephson points out, stating the reasons on the record not only for denial but an award of shared custody. That will require a few more questions, a little more time. Again, the court is anticipating that there will be no new resources to help, and without new resources, you can't do an involved investigation, but the court can absorb a little bit of extra time that's going to be required to put those questions on the record. And as a result, the court system has submitted a zero fiscal note on that assumption. One more point that might be of interest to the committee, the language that you were just considering, Section 2, Paragraph F, that first line, the court shall consider only those factors directly affecting the well-being of the child, is the holding of a recent Supreme Court case. So this legislation has the impact of adopting a statement that the Supreme Court has made that was not clear before then. Really, the second statement, the court doesn't have a position, but that's something that was not a part of the Supreme Court's decision and was not discussed in that case. That's a new concept that was introduced on the floor. And I'd be glad to answer any questions anyone might have.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In actuality, this becomes something like something analogous to what happens at a plea in a criminal situation where you ask the defendant, are you under the influence of any drugs or alcohol, and did anybody make any promises to you, and do you make this, give your plea voluntarily and without coercion, and are you satisfied with your attorney, and that kind of questioning. I imagine that's what would happen here. I mean, how else would you determine that the agreement was made, you know, without duress or coercion? Was that what you contemplated, or am I wrong in my supposition?
And through the Chair, Senator Joseph, and that is correct. Just a few more questions along those lines.
That would require, in an uncontested situation, that both parents be there, I guess, in the courtroom to answer that question. You can't have a situation where a father or mother says, you go to court, I don't want to, it's too tough on me, I don't want to be there, and I'll let you put on proof, and I'll file my appearance and waiver. You have to be there to answer the question.
Through the Chair, Senator Josephson, that's not the way that the court system has interpreted that language. And to be honest with you, that language has been interpreted with the practical orientation that we're not going to be looking at greatly extended court hearings, that both parties are going to be required to be there in each and every case in which there are minor children of the marriage and a settlement agreement. That's going to have a significant impact on length of divorce trials. I just don't think that that's an interpretation that the courts would place
but
on that language.
I don't have a favorite interpretation. I just want to know how else could you, and this is not going to be just a paper machine, how else are you going to determine that the party was not subjected to duress or coercion, unless you're going to accept a written statement at the bottom of the agreement that this agreement was made voluntarily and like an acknowledgement. So,
what happens if Joe and I get a divorce, and I don't show up, and Joe gets the kids, and hypothetical, please, Joe. And 2 weeks later, I come in and say, hey, wait a minute, you granted this divorce, and nobody questioned me to see whether or not I was coerced or whether it was in the best interest of the child. Then what happened?
Senator Farenkamp, right now the procedures you would execute what's known as an appearance and waiver, which is a legal document basically saying I understand what's going on here and I agree to it. And I think the court's assumption is now and would continue to be that you had executed that knowing what you were doing.
Then how is that going to change the wife who's been misled or misinformed by the husband or vice versa in the court case? And it seems to me like it doesn't do anything. Am I missing something?
Senator, I think you raise a valid point. Again, the concern here was to try to do, my understanding of the position of the bill's proponents is to try to have some impact in this particular area that's going to basically be a consciousness-raising tool on the part of courts, have the courts take a bit more of a look at these agreements, and if there are any glaring problems, to look at them, but not to require.
But I think the chair is exactly right and raises it. Awfully impressed because I think the Senator from Fairbanks got right to the heart of this, that we already have a procedure called the appearance and waiver procedure or the acknowledgement in the pleading when the documents come to court, a complaint which is waived, where the responding party says that freely and voluntarily of my own will, without coercion, I acknowledge this document and agree that Jim can come to court and I waive notice of the proceeding. So if you're using documentary evidence, you already have in the file that statement of voluntariness. And the only way to really determine if the, particularly the woman, as I said a minute ago, was coerced or not, and whether there's genuine voluntariness, is to have that woman in court and look at her demeanor and sense in relation to the spouse who is probably in court also, you know, whether this is a bullying situation or an overreaching situation. And unless the court system is prepared, I think, to go through that, I don't think this legislation is going to do very much except put a second piece of paper that says the same thing as the first piece of paper.
Well, Senator, in discussions with the bill's proponents, it's my understanding, and perhaps Ms. Marshall can correct me if I'm in error on this, that it was not their intent to have both parties present in all custody matters for that examination, and our fiscal note is predicated on that assumption. If, in fact, the intent behind this legislation, or as would be expressed by the committee, is that both parties would have to be there, certainly that is going to have a fiscal impact that basically would be translated into longer hearings, delays in divorce hearings. And if that is the view of the committee, that is what the intent is of this, the court system will revise its fiscal note to reflect that impact.
Well, I'm not trying to throw water on a piece of legislation or just disappoint people who, but I don't want to either do some things that I feel have been done recently with even some floor actions. I don't want people to go out with a perception that there's been one major change in things that are happening when there's no change. So I think that needs to be, as you in your subcommittee are looking into this, would you please clarify that for us?
Okay.
Are there further questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there anyone else who wishes to testify concerning this legislation?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I would hope that, no, seriously, because I think that a serious issue has been raised that we might go back to the maker of the amendment to find out what was thought of in this regard. You know who that was?
Just
The floor amendment.
Okay. This legislation does go from this committee to judiciary, but it's not my intent to move that legislation without knowing what we're doing. So we'll wait then for Senator Josephson to come back to us with.
Madam Chair, do you want, like this is a small meeting tomorrow, to see if there's a resolution?
Yes. We may have a few other things on a small meeting tomorrow. We're running out of time.
We really are.
thank you very much. The next legislation before us is Senate Bill 435, establishing the Children's Trust Fund. Now, we were just, we've just been informed over and over that Senate bills that are still within this body are in great danger. So if there's going to be anything done about this bill, it has to be now. And I'd like for us to hear some clear and convincing evidence quickly. Thank you.
Thanks, Madam Chairman. My name is Beth Kurtula. I'm a volunteer to Senator Kurtula, and I'm here to speak today on Senate Bill 435. I first of all want to say how much the Senator appreciates the committee hearing the bill and that we fully recognize the late date in the session. After talking at length with the Department of Health and Social Services and with your staff, it's been just tremendous help. I think that the sponsor understands, and we've also expressed this concern to people who are in strong support of the bill, the fact that there need to be some substantive changes reworked within the bill, and our hope today is simply to bring the concept before the committee, make you all aware of it, and to be able to work on this in the interim and reintroduce the bill in its changed form next session. So I'm going to keep my comments very brief. The department is here, and I believe staff from Representative Binkley's office is also here in support of it. The general,
Beth, may I
yes,
there just a moment?
Please.
It might be helpful to you then, and I can see the I can see the intent behind it. The more committee's input that you can get then before the session is over, the better prepared you'll be for your adjustments and hearings this summer.
That's absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. In fact, I'm prepared to simply take questions today if the committee has them, because those are the things that we truly need.
Well, could you just very quickly, we know that there's about three things this does. Just run through that very quickly.
Very, very simply, the bill will set up a public trust corporation that will receive money from a checkoff on the permanent fund dividend, just like we're doing for the Olympics. It's my opinion, although I think there was a question at the beginning about dedication of funds, that this is legal. That was the conceptual form, was to allow that as a checkoff or a way for monies to come into the corporation. The corporation has a board of directors, just runs just about like any other corporation. And the basic idea is to give us one central place where there can be money taken in and given out to protect children and to advance children's rights in Alaska. So that's the basic concept. The people that have helped work on this bill are in agreement with the department's suggested changes, and there are some things that do need to be reworked in the bill. But I think that overall the idea and the concept of it is a real good one, and we just wanted to make the committee aware of it. Thank you.
Okay.
commend the sponsor for putting this in. I think it has some good features, and I do think that the Health and Social Services did an excellent job on their position paper, and I particularly note the section calling for advocacy. I think it needs to be clearly defined, its relationship to the various programs in Health and Social Services and also in sexual abuse assault programs. I certainly think there should be, however, an Attorney General's opinion on the fund. I would certainly want to see them under the Executive Budget Act and subject to APOC and, you know, those other kinds of things. I don't think it's an extraordinary thing. And a little bit of awkwardness, I think, in terms of the management of the fund. I think that needs to be thought through a bit. So it's just, I see just a lot of work that needs to be done with a very good concept.
Thank you.
Is that kind?
That's very.
Are there further questions, comments?
I agree with Jeff.
Beth, Lieutenant Spotman.
Right. And we've appreciated the department's work and Dr. Brown, who's worked long and hard on this legislation and has much support, is in agreement with the department too, so we're in very high hopes that we can work together.
It might be then that since this has fallen, yes, I believe, the judiciary, it might be that we could get this to them in time, have some of their input. If we can get some of these amendments made and a committee substitute for one.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll
We're
have the committee substitute prepared and possibly move
please,
this.
Please work
session.
With staff on that.
I will. Thank you. Thank you.
Frank Barthol, Department of Health and Social Services.
I basically just take a quick minute of your time, Madam Chairman. I have the comments that I'm working with Beth on this and the changes that are in that position paper that we'll work on. I'd be glad to work with Beth and staff. We
Thank
do
you
support
very much,
the concept.
We're very appreciative of your comments. I think you've looked at this with a lot of depth and very positive manner. We appreciate that. Erwin Jones, Department of Revenue. Somebody ever in the Department of Revenue? Is anyone else who wishes to testify on this legislation? Please come forward.
Madam Chair, I'm Mary Beth Hilburn, representing Representative John Binkley, and he'd like for me to just express his support for the concept of the formation of the Alaska Children's Trust Corporation. There's long been a need to develop some systematic way to fund children's prevention and child abuse prevention and treatment programs and to help the child victims of neglect and abuse. And this seems to be a good way to begin addressing this situation. The connection between the incidence of child abuse, neglect, and a variety of adult problems, such as continuing child abuse, domestic violence, criminal behavior, mental illness, has been well documented. If the cycle of abuse is ever to be broken, we need to begin by setting prevention and treatment as a priority. This fund could assure provision of needed services now and on into the future.
I've long been dismayed by, and I know that our social workers in the Department of Health and Social Services does not have the revenues or the personnel needed to really follow up in child abuse, sexual assault, these kinds of cases. And the effects on children, of course, we all know, male or female, last a lifetime, unless they're helped quickly and as long as necessary. And this, I think, has been an area this whole committee has been very concerned with all year. So we appreciate Representative Binkley's concern, and we'll see if that's in the record to move.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on this legislation? Very well. Beth, you may tell the sponsor that we'll work with you as much as we can and try to get this to judiciary at our earliest possibility. So no draggy feet, huh?
Oh, thank you.
Okay, members of the committee. Look,
I
was making
I know. Sure. See, you didn't have any faith in yourself there.
One thing that's bothering me now, and that is the amount of legislation. I'm hopeful that those of you on the committee will take a look at the House numbers, House bills that are being referred to this committee, and those in which you have great interest, please bring them to my attention so that we can waive the 24-hour rule or whatever we have to do to get them before the committee. If you have questions concerning them that we should go to the sponsors on or anything of that sort, please let me know that too. I'm not closing down the committee. I'm just trying to set priorities. So, and please be expecting a call at at any time we can get it as we go through these next few days.
Did your staff already prepare a list that you presently have in your committee, or you just pull it up on the computer?
We can get one.
We'll try to get those.
We can do it on the computer, too. I just didn't want to double up it.
You've got them.
Okay.
We'll just get them to your boxes or your offices this afternoon. And I just really, truly appreciate all the help you can give me trying to get, as I know you live in resources and you and the others, to try to see that we don't let something fall through the cracks. That's very important. Senator Joseph and I appreciate you taking a look at the other legislation. Committee's adjourned.